D-Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5 The Game, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Finnegan here with you. Pleased to be joined by our friend Jonathan Hutton, fresh off another episode of Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow on OutKick. Hello, Hutton. How are you?
Doing very well. It is great to be on a drive time. This is the coveted spot that Chad and I never achieved. So congratulations, guys. Willie, welcome back.
Yeah. Well, hey, Hutt, you got the 5 o'clock slot here. No pressure.
I know.
No pressure. You got to bring it. Let's have your best fastball. We need your best.
Coming up, too. On Friday.
So, Hutton, we were talking about a story at Sportico.com about NFL ticket revenue in 2024. The headline is that the San Francisco 49ers generated $176 million in net gate receipts from general seating and club seating in 2024. Conversely, the Tennessee Titans, although their ticket revenue jumped 10%, it was $81 million, which was lowest in the NFL for the second straight year. So when you hear that, what comes to mind? Is that a function of the fact that Nashville is a smaller market in the NFL? The Titans' inability to connect with fans. What comes to mind when you hear those totals?
What comes to mind is it's the exact reason why we're seeing so many stadiums being built again. San Francisco is in a cavern in Santa Clara, having been there on the sideline. And it is massive when it comes to suites, very expensive suites. I would say it doubles, if not triples, the amount. Just looking around and trying to remember what it looked like in there, compared to what is offered at Nissan Stadium. I think a lot of that revenue, a lot of the high-powered clients, the tech companies, my guess is they're spending much more money on the premium seating options than what Nissan Stadium has to offer. And that's going to change with the new stadium.
Hutton, a gigantic deal in sports announced yesterday with ESPN and the NFL coming together. The NFL going to own a 10% stake of ESPN. What is the most interesting aspect of this marriage to you? And my second question is, how much do you think this will affect how the NFL is covered by ESPN, specifically the kinds of stories that could be described as scandalous?
So the most interesting part of this is what ESPN can branch off and do with the license of Red Zone, with what they can do now for college football, the SEC. I mean, if you think about the properties that they have and the inventory that they air, they could do a college football Red Zone, which they tried to do kind of with McAfee and Reese Davis. This would be totally different with the assets that they have and the different host studios and the fact that they can go to these live games if they so choose. That's good for the consumer. That's good for me. I don't hate this like some people do, because I would prefer having 1, 2, 3 streaming services instead of 7 or 8, where I know I have to go and find the majority of football games. And football that I normally will watch and care about will be on ESPN moving forward. SEC, they've got Big 12 games, ACC, they've got college football. And the NFL, I mean, the NFL has 10% stake. So, I mean, what ESPN has done here is they have ensured that a company like Netflix or Amazon or both are not going to come back whenever the NFL opts out in 2029 of these broadcast agreements. ESPN's not going anywhere, because NFL, they have a ownership stake in the company. So why would they let Netflix engulf everything? Amazon, if they so want, Apple, if they wanted to, could pay for the rights across the board. If they wanted to, and put some of these apps, out to pasture. I don't think that's happening with ESPN. And I mean, look, they narrowed their focus. They got rid of some properties, and they have bought in on the NFL and the SEC. And oh, by the way, they're outsourcing a lot of this. They're doing that with inside the NBA. They just acquired WWE pay-per-views. They're in the streaming business, and the price tag is what it is. But if I get to eliminate a couple things and only have to watch Peacock for a playoff game, I'm better off for it, because I don't normally watch that app unless it's for football. As for how the league is covered, Adam, I don't think it's going to change all that much because the NFL already owns every channel out there, every broadcast network out there in terms of how it's covered and what is or isn't covered. I didn't hear anyone telling Tua Tagovailoa to get back out on the field. They were all very cautious about the concussions, as they should be. But that's just one example. Everyone was pushing the same direction whenever John Gruden had to resign with what happened in Vegas. Same thing with the Washington Commanders name, all this stuff. It's the league messaging that a lot of the coverage is going by what the league is doing. Because look, in the details of these broadcast agreements, CBS and Paramount just restructured ownership. That is a clause in the contract that technically the NFL could get out of business with CBS if they wanted to. That's why CBS helped produce the games for Netflix on Christmas Day last year. They're playing nice with the league so that when the ownership things happen, the changeover with their company, they're still going to have the NFL license and the broadcast agreements. And again, just going back to it, I don't think Schefter is going to change the way he covers the league. And I don't think we'll see any different on Sunday Night Football on NBC.
You may be right about that, Hutt, in regards to how they cover the league. But I think they've already showed their hand in regards to this whole collusion stuff and even the NFLPA. They haven't covered that as much. Now, they will cover, as they have been, day-to-day stuff like games during the season. But I think when you start getting into some of these sticky situations, I want to see then how ESPN choose to cover it. Do they choose to go full bore and cover it like they would cover anything else? Or will they pull back on stories? Not necessarily they won't talk about it, but they won't talk about it in depth.
Well, I mean, guys like Stephen A. and McAfee will.
But even Stephen A., he hadn't said anything much about this.
Well, but he's called out his boss before, mm-hmm. Like called him a rat. Like I don't think my point is like I don't think there are certain hosts who will cover it, mm-hmm. but I know what you're asking. What you guys are asking is it's the meat and potatoes, the digging of breaking news, mm-hmm. and I don't think there's a lot of that going on anyway right now. In regards to protecting the shield. I'm not talking about like a domestic violence case or how something's covered with concussion protocol or what have you. This is like, really the only ownership issue that we've seen covered in depth was Daniel Snyder. And that's pretty much it. Jerry Jones, did we hear much about the paternity test flaw? Mm-hmm. I didn't, Jerry Jones is on the broadcast committee for the owners. So was Robert Kraft. We didn't hear much about Orchids of Asia Day Spa when that was going down. So I don't think it changes all that much, D-Mace. Mm-hmm.
Now, getting back to the Tennessee Titans, we had an earlier conversation about some of the things that we observed today, Willie and I. Adam wasn't able to make it out there today.
I wasn't.
And the offense was pretty good, actually. One of the things that I brought up and Willie noticed, too, it's the offensive line. There hasn't been much talk about the offensive line. In my opinion, that's a good thing because we've talked about them too much last two going on three seasons. Well, really three going on four. And it wasn't good. What do you expect? Do you think this offensive line is getting better by what you're seeing when you're out there to practice?
Yeah, I mean, I think – if we're just talking about if we're listing just the five best players on this roster, Mace, mm-hmm. isn't Latham on that list? Isn't Skoronski on that list right now? Five best just football players.
Yeah. I mean, they don't have too many good ones, and so they would be on the list.
I would agree with that.
Okay. So to me, we have to see Dan Moore. I mean, that's their solution to the left tackle problem is moving Latham, or the tackle problem is moving Latham back to right tackle, where he's looked very good, I think. Same for Skoronski. and you add a veteran at right guard, now the veteran at left tackle, and the key comes down to center and Cushenberry and the injury. Like, I know the expectations are he sooner rather than later, but, I mean, who knows? I mean, I only hesitate because of what we were led to believe about Legarius Sneed. So who knows? That's the linchpin for me, is that rookie quarterback, you want to have your best center in there, and, you know, you don't want to be rotating guys in midseason. So, yeah, if it's solid, healthy, it's a much better year than a year ago. However, with a rookie quarterback, there are some unknowns here where there's going to be some sacks where, you know, it's not necessarily on the offensive line, but a lot was. And here's the key point. It's not even keying in on the sacks for me. It is the pre-snap penalties, the holding calls, the unforced defense, nothing to have to do with great defense, where the Titans put themselves behind the chains, second and pass, instead of second and manageable. And far too many times that happened. And I look at the offensive line and think that I remember plenty of penalties that go directly back to where the ball snapped up front. They've got to clean that up. Otherwise, this is going to be another just terrible year, because they had way too many three and outs, and it's because of a lot of pre-snap penalties. I think they had over pre-snap like 50.
Fourth most in the NFL last year.
Yeah, there you go. Down.
So you're leading me right into what I was going to ask you about. That's why I had these numbers in front of me here, Hutt. But one thing we discussed is a Sean Payton narrative that's going around the circles right now in the success story of Bo Nix, right? He did not turn the ball over that much, and he was really good last year at not getting sacked. And Sean Payton says sacks are a quarterback stat. And that got us really talking about going back through the debacle that happened last year. And we were kind of asking ourselves, because Sean Payton goes into a lot of times the offensive line gets way more blame than they should, when it really should be the quarterback. And there was a big difference in the percentage of times Will Levis got sacked as opposed to Mason Rudolph, who was much better at avoiding sacks and getting rid of the ball. And that has us asking the question, what will it look like for Cam Ward, especially in the context of what D-Mace asked, with the investment of the offensive line, you hope that you're going to get better offensive line play. How much better do you think they can get in that area?
Well, I mean, look, so far, we see various examples of just really bad rookie play when it comes to sacks. Caleb Williams comes to mind, Willie.
Yes, and who graded very poorly in college from that. And that's been, especially in comparison to Nix, people are kind of looking at that closer than they did before.
And Cam Ward is going to use his athleticism, try to extend plays. That will happen. He is facing some blitz packages, defensive personnel from some defensive coordinators right out of the gate. That is not easy. Speaking of Denver. So I look at it and think, I think it's going to be rocky to start. I don't think it looks much better to begin. But this is the mandate from ownership that they have to develop and improve over the course of the season. So this has to mature and get better. I will go back to, and again, the limited snaps I've seen in camp, guys, I do think, as bad as some of the offenses looked, Cam Ward has been on time. I don't think he's patting the ball. He's certainly not Malik Willis, where it's one look and he's bailing. I think he's confident, and he's accountable. So in all of that, you know, get rid of the football. Far too often, Levis is holding on to it. I don't know how many sacks are saved based on that, but I also know there were some jailbreak moments too. And again, that just comes down to the confidence of what you have up front. And we went through the starters up front of the offensive line. I don't see much depth. They still need another year of acquiring depth. And I do see a lot of two tight, sometimes, you know, the three tight packages. So they can be creative in how they're going to do this. They also got a bigger back in the draft. So, you know, there has to be solutions other than the quarterback just needs to ground the football. Like this comes down to, you know, Bill Callahan's there for a reason, I guess is what I'm saying.
To add context to Willie's thoughts there, Hutton, last season, Will Levis had a pressure to sack ratio of 30.4% compared to Mason Rudolph at 12.4%.
Right. Playing in front of the same offensive line in the same offense. So that tells you that Levis had a lot to do with it with the same offensive line. So here's the next question, Hutt, that I think is an important one. Everybody's looking to see how Cam Ward does. That's going to define Brian Callahan more than anything else. But I think people are also going to look at Callahan in between year one and year two of looking like a cohesive team. Certainly Mike Borgonzi is on the record with this. So we've already mentioned pre-snap penalties, red zone stuff, turnovers. Yes. They were 31st. They were last in special teams. How much of that do you think is they just don't have the horses? And how much of those categories that I'm mentioning that where you have maybe a little more control was coaching?
Well, I mean, he's not fumbling the football and throwing picks. You know, he's not missing tackles. They were really bad at tackling last year. Really bad. I'm just trying to think of examples of like they were minus 16 in turnover ratio last year.
Yep.
Minus 16. So with all that in mind, the short fields that come with that, look, Callahan, his rookie season couldn't have gone much worse. There's a reason why, like, they've publicly said, like, he and his staff have to show that they can develop what we have. And new general manager, new leadership shakeup this offseason. Willie, I mean, it's the record, I don't think, can look exactly the same. I don't think the record has to be just substantially better, but the vibe and the trajectory of this roster and this coaching staff has to. You know, he brought in a lot of staff that they did in the front office too, but it's not like a ton of coaching turnover. So, you know, how much does the changes at special teams at coach, how much does that play a factor? And just protect the football. I mean, I'm guilty of this too, and rightfully so. I mean, he deserves the blame, but like Levis for those early turnovers, the other mistakes throughout the season too are just, you know, it's the sign of a very undisciplined team. And I think the blow up that he had earlier this week is indicative of just a frustration level of knowing that he's got to show more offense than what 16, 17, 18 points per game. Yeah, that's heading down the road of 13 losses again and embarrassment, and that'll get you fired.
Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow joining us on the program. He will join us every Wednesday at 5 o'clock. Hutton, great stuff as always, my friend. We'll chat next week.
Yeah, I enjoy this, guys. Always enjoy doing the show with you. Have a great rest of the week.
You as well, Hutton. 615-737-1025. Back to our previous conversation about Titans and ticket revenue and things like that. There was a text that we read, and I've gone back and I've thought about it a little bit, and I have a theory that I want to share with everybody. I want to see if I'm completely off base thinking about this. I will ask Willie and Derek and all of you. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game. D. Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan. We hope you are having a relaxing drive home. You know, I can be prone to road rage every once in a while.
We got to take care of that. We got to get that
thing. It's not extreme.
I can't imagine you in a rage, Adam. Yeah.
Wow.
I've seen D-Mace on the field get frustrated. You know, I got teed up a few times.
I do have to watch what my son calls bathroom words. Now, I don't curse in front of my son, at least not on purpose. I have to come up with alternatives to curse that aren't upsetting to his 3-year-old ears so that he doesn't repeat them at preschool.
Horse feathers.
Yes.
Horseradish.
Bull honky. That's what I
fertilizer.
That's what I tend to go with.
But darn it.
I have a theory I was thinking about during the break. Lenny on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, talking about the Titans and ticket revenue and all of those things. He says fans are not appreciated by the Titans. And I was thinking about another text that we got from an unnamed texter. We read it on the air. The issue with the Titans and connecting with fans is that people of a certain age, all grew up with other teams as their team they cheer for, and they have maintained those allegiances even after moving to Nashville. So here's my theory, and this is completely anecdotal, but I do not really hear the same thing when it comes to the Nashville Predators, at least since I've been here. And I've been here since spring of 2015. The team was on the come up when I moved here and started covering the team. I covered a lot of successful teams, depending on your definition of success. But and of course, there are plenty of transplants here who still cheer for the Blackhawks and the Rangers and so on. But I feel the Predators have done a much better job of entrenching themselves in this community than the Titans. And maybe it's because they're a hockey team in the South, and they have to work harder to do that than a football team in the South. But as I've been reading your text and hearing what you're saying about the Titans and the in-game experience and the ticket prices and all of those things, not saying that the Predators don't have those same problems. The Predators struggled last season. Ticket prices are up. Pricing out the diehard fans, all of those things. But am I wrong in thinking this? That I just don't hear that when it comes to the Predators the same way I hear about it with the Titans.
I think the Titans, once there was a time long, long, long ago. there was a time long, long, long ago that this team, you know, went out of their way to pull in, you know, anybody of earshot at that stadium or the city and try to pull them in to become Titans fans. And, you know, the first years it was tough because we were still playing in Memphis, or the first year in Memphis and then Vandy. But when we got into that new stadium, it seemed like all that hard work that they were, we were going on. And I know they still probably do the caravans and all that stuff. But, I mean, we were doing things left and right to try to ingratiate ourselves with the community. And it worked because when we moved in that stadium, it was sold out. And it doesn't hurt when you start winning. So I think there was a period where they just lost their way. And I'm not sure if they tried hard enough. It was almost like this big machine is running. We just going to let it run no matter what. It's the NFL. People will come. Don't worry about it. We may have some down seasons here, but people will come back. And I think, yeah, people did come to the games, but I think you may have lost some of what you built up. You know, in those 3 or 4 years, well, 2 years prior to us actually moving into Tosh Stadium. And then after 99, those 3 or 4 years after that, you built up so much equity. And it seems like right around that 2000, what was it, Willie, 15, 16, no, before that, around 12. Where Wizen Hunt and the whole where the team just for a while just was bad. Yeah, I think you lost a lot of that equity.
Yeah, I think
that you built up.
I would, you know, to me these we have I have the fortune I guess the honor, I don't know. I was doing sports talk for years in this city before we had the Titans or the Predators. So I watched it from the day that the city got announced as an expansion franchise and from the day that the news story hit that Bud Adams is starting a process to move the Houston Oilers to Nashville. I mean, that was incredible news at the time. And we all had a vision of what is this going to look like. But we're 25, 27 years now from that. Like, we're on the second generation of fans. It shouldn't be a problem of, hey, a lot of people have moved to Nashville. You should have your base by now. You should have enough people in this city that have grown up loving the Titans, have grown up loving the Predators. I feel like the Predators are much, much better standing than they were. Here's the difference to me. The Predators from day one knew they had to fight, not only because you didn't have any team to root for, but they didn't have a lot of people that knew hockey at all. So they had to fight for every fan to convert them, and they knew they were going to have to work for every fan. I think the Titans had a lot more of an attitude of, hey, I'm bringing the NFL to your city. You guys are lucky to have us. I'm opening the doors. You guys coming in. What else did they have going for them? The team was awesome from day one, and that made it even easier. They used to have people sleeping overnight to get the tickets to Nissan Stadium, which you weren't going for the stadium. You were going to see Mason and McNair and Wycheck and Eddie George and Blaine Bishop and those guys, right? They had it really easy early. They never had to work for it. The Predators had 5 or 6 years of being an expansion franchise that couldn't win. They were had a lot less to spend. They had a lot less access to players. And they had a game that was foreign to the market. So they had to work double, triple hard. So that's the foundation that they were built on as opposed to the Titans. And I think you're seeing the growth 25 years later.
Let's go to Jason in Hendersonville on our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com. Jason, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys. Yeah, I said in Section 215, or I did. But, I mean, some of the blame, too, correct me if I'm wrong, could be on the fans as well because, I mean, in the beginning, yeah, they catered to filling that stadium up and trying to convert people, you know, a city that's filled with mixed fans. Like, I grew up a Steeler fan, and I converted over to be a Titan fan, a fan of my home team. But, I mean, even in those days, I mean, certain teams came, or a lot of teams came, and it was half and half. And other than the year that obviously, you know, they were on that run and it was sold out, those were the best years, obviously, with the most Titan fans in there. But they started to dwindle. So, I mean, what else do you expect an owner who, you know, and it is a business, you know, to, you know, sell out to the corporations and jack everything up. And, you know, they got to get their money out of it. You know, they're investing the money into the stadium along with everyone else. So, so some of the blame, and not that I agree with it, but some of the blame can be placed on people not becoming diehard fans and trying to get in there. And the reason why you're not hearing about it, I think, with the Predators is because everybody really did buy into the Predators. And if I'm not mistaken, the most every game that I go to, it's packed with Predator fans. And they don't sell out very much to the opposing team. So you guys can comment on that. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Jason. Yeah,
well, listen, the Predators – they went out of their way, like deliberately, intentionally, to keep other fan bases out there building. And it worked. However you want to slice it, it worked. Everybody that's in a building is majority Nashville Predator fans. You'll get some other fans coming in, but not like it once was when, you know, the Red Wing fans would be in there just as much as the Predator fans or the Blackhawk fans. They had had enough of that, and they shut it all down. I'm not sure the Titans are going to go that route or can go that route. I think they've done a better job, but the product on the field hasn't gotten better. That's the problem. Even though they may be out there trying to reach fans and trying to get them to come, what are you selling them? You're not selling them anything. You're going to try to sell them Cam Ward? I get it. But people are hesitant about Cam Ward, and not because of Cam Ward, because of y'all. Not because of Cam. So I think it's going to be this way until the Titans get back to their winning ways. And if a lot of it is because of Cam Ward, then you will see less Titans fans selling their tickets than not. You're still going to get opposing fans coming in here. That's just going to happen. But I think if the quarterback hits, you're going to see less and less of the the opposing team's fans in the building.
I also ask this question: How much will they try, the Titans, to make these last 2 years in this stadium worthwhile to people? For example, I drive by there every day. I made a big deal of this about 10 years ago, and I believe this is the last time they did that. But like the light poles, the red paint all on the light poles is very faded. It just doesn't look good, right? It doesn't look big time. The stadium's never going to be anything, but that's the kind of thing that, will they just neglect that and just ride it out? Or will they take a little of your own money? I always feel like they're only going to do the minimum. There's nothing that says
it's gonna
that
be a
you
rundown
can't
stadium.
Invest in your own stadium, even though, yeah, the city is supposed to pay for a certain... I'm not talking about just replacing the seats, but they've always just had this minimalist. So will they even try now that it's a lame duck stadium make it? Or are they just going to say, you know what, just we'll worry about it when the new stadium opens. You're going to be impressed, And these next 2 years,
I hope they don't.
Who cares?
I really do. I hope they do not. And I want to believe that Amy, the owner, will not allow that to happen, because basically you got two lame duck seasons in this, you know, in this new stadium, in the old stadium. So they didn't get rid of a bunch of parking spaces. What else are they going to sort of pull back on? I hope it's not the case where the fans then suffer, you know, when they go to the stadium. I'm believing that it's not going to be that way. But you brought up a good question. Like, are they just going to say, you know what, we're going to put more of our attention toward the new stadium and not this one?
615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We want your reaction. That was my theory. I hear this a lot about the Titans. I really don't hear it about the Predators. And I'm just curious about whether the Titans are putting in the effort to engage fans, especially as the team struggles and rebuilds. 615-737-1025. We will wrap the show today with your reaction. Coming up next, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game. D-Mace Vingan and Donick, 1025 The Game. Wrapping up here with you on your drive home. Let's go to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Gary. Gary, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
I think the reason that you saw a difference in the way the Predators sold themselves to the city and the middle Tennessee area as opposed to the Titans is that the Predators didn't have to overcome other fandom. There wasn't a lot of hockey fans in Nashville. You didn't see sweaters from other teams all the time. They had to sell them on hockey. The Predators came with it. They weren't having to overcome, like, you know, at one time the Cowboys had like four players with Tennessee connections on their team. We all became their fans. You know, we followed them for decades, and we all followed football, and we had those things. But hockey was brand new. But we didn't have they didn't have to make me no longer a Chicago fan, a Blackhawk fan. They just had to get me interested in hockey.
Thank you for the call, Gary. That's a good point. Let's go to Matt in Bellevue on our phone line, driven by Wilson County. Hyundai.com. Matt, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
What's up, fellas?
How are you?
What's going on?
So, yeah, nothing. So, I've been going to those games. I've been going to Titans games for the last 14 years, right? And, you know, D-Mace, you've been a player, but you haven't, you know, you haven't lived as a fan. You know, you were in the stadium. But for 14 years, what made Tennessee Titan football amazing to me was the way we tailgate. I'd have friends come in, Baltimore friends, because I'm an East Coast guy from Virginia Beach. I had friends come in all the time, Raven guys. Man, you guys know how to do it, man. This is the way you tailgate. If you looked at last year, parking lot A, parking lot B, parking lot C, we had a tailgate that we used to make the Thursday night news. They would come over, look for the skull and crossbone. That we'd have 400 people out for that tailgate, and it was a lifestyle. You gave $30 to the host, and you ate and drank everything, and the parties that we had made the news. But with no tailgating, you take away the tailgate, you take away that lifestyle. All you got is a rundown stadium, a team in a rebuild. It's not the same lifestyle. And I really think if they wanted to do something, work on this section, work on that section, but leave those parking lots, right, that parking lot A, B. If the only parking lots last year that had any cars or any possibility of a tailgate were on the water side, and nobody ever did tailgates over on that side anyway. So no tailgate, no party, no fun, no wins. You know, what do you got?
No fans.
And, no fans, right? It's, a lifestyle is a lifestyle. You take away that lifestyle, we did a lot of things to live this that lifestyle is gone. That all you got is construction and bad football.
Matt, I just want to say before you go, as one Virginia Beach native to another, I appreciate you.
Hey, I already know Hokey. I hear you up there. And they don't know what they don't know. They hate us because they hate us. If you've never been in a game, in if you've never been in a game in Lane Stadium, You don't know. You don't know.
Thank you for the call, Matt.
Thank you. But listen, Matt is...
Love some Virginia Beach love.
Matt
is
right. And obviously they can't... I'm sure there's not much they can do about it now because of the construction that's going on. But yeah, when you take away, as the caller said, the lifestyle of the fan base, you're going to get people to start to come. And now you hope that once the new stadium is built, they put those parking spaces back and they allow, you know, that lifestyle to continue with those Titan fans that love tailgating and made it a part of their Sundays during home games. So hopefully they do interject that back into, you know, sort of the pregame festivities. Because if they don't, you better be winning some ball games. That's all I got to say.
One texter says, the constant stupidity and incompetence of Titans ownership warrants a good enough reason not to support them. Predators actually care about their fans.
I can't, because I've seen and heard, and you know Willie can attest to it because he talks about it, the Predators have gone out their way.
And the Predators,
it's paid dividends, and the Titans seem to be going. I know Amy doesn't want it to go this way, and I know she's done a lot of stuff to try to change that narrative. But there's still a portion of the fan base that calls in or texts in, and this is what they're talking about.
I think a couple of the things about the Predators to keep in mind going forward: A, they're going through a renovation of their building, which is going to take a couple of years. When it's all done, it looks nice. Like it's going to be
spectacular. And they've been pumping so much money into renovating that building forever.
That's what I was going to say. They have been doing it incrementally and not just, hey, we haven't done anything for 20 years, now let's do it. They've been doing it, and now they're taking it to another level. But they're going to have to manage what the caller is pointing out. Like, it's not – people might have to change their routine. But hopefully it'll be worthwhile, and hopefully they will take the extra effort to, you know, look out, listen to what the fans are saying about their experience, and okay, let's make it the best we can while we upgrade all these things. And then the second part that he was talking about with the and now I've lost my train of thought. You were going to say something, Adam, but go ahead. I'll come back to it.
I think your point about the fact that the Titans know they have probably two more seasons in Nissan Stadium, the current Nissan Stadium. I think your point earlier was well said. Hopefully the Titans just don't let old current Nissan Stadium go to rot, because, hey, in a couple of years, it's not going to be here anymore. We don't need to update it. We don't need to, you know, clean up the bathrooms and give it a nice coat of paint. We're just going to let it be a dump for the next 2 years, because then it will be a parking lot. Like, I do think that will be a key sign about the Titans and their appreciation, for lack of a better term, of the fans. Because look, we've all been there. We're about to move. You see something broken? You know, I'll let the next guy fix it. Right? I'm not going to put that fresh coat of paint on there.
I think so, and I think too. How much does ownership invest in their own and not just sit back and say, "Well, the city should pay for this." Mm-hmm. You know, I do think the Predators have their ownership has invested along the way some of their own money and not just what the city gives them to keep it up. And I think that they have preserved the arena, which is older than the stadium. Mm-hmm. It's just, but you don't sit there and walk into Bridgestone Arena and say, well, this place is outdated, man. It's falling apart. You've never said that about it, because they're always keeping it up. The other thing I was going to mention is the Predators may be going into, we'll see how this year goes, they have not had a long rebuild, as we have chronicled.
Or ever.
Mm-hmm. Not since the beginning of the expansion, when they were, you know, they were hamstrung by the rules at the time. They were a small market, all the things we said. So if they will have challenges in all these things if they struggle again, which they're hoping they don't. But we know that when the preseason predictions come out, I don't think there's going to be a lot of people around the league that are saying, hey, watch out for the Predators. They're one of the best in the league. So there's always challenges, but how do you handle the challenges?
And the one thing that all of you know who attend Predators games and also Titans games, but specifically Predators games, is that you know that you are going to have a good time, right? The Predators do a good job with their in-game experience. I hear it all the time from out-of-town fans, out-of-town reporters about how great the atmosphere is at Bridgestone Arena. I know that it's come and gone with how the team has performed, but the baseline is still pretty damn good. You don't hear that about the Tennessee Titans. I know that Titans fan, out of town fans, they come in because they know that they're going to have the run of the stadium probably, and the stadium isn't far from Broadway. But I am incredibly curious about the next couple of years with the state of the Tennessee Titans, the state of the current Nissan Stadium, and how those two things are going to mesh as the Titans prepare to move into the new stadium and hope that those same fans that have been angered by how the team has played and the way the organization has been over the past few years, they want to make sure those fans are going to be in that new stadium. I am incredibly curious about how these next couple of years are going to go.
And we're just getting started.
Yeah, well, it's just like the quarterback. Wait and see. But
because that's the backdrop of it, too, because you're hoping the hinges on him. The guy, he's got to make it 2 years in this stadium before he ever gets to play in the new one.
He's
and
the only
the roster going to be all of the questions go with
he
that.
He is the one component, that sort of one hope component that can change everything, for the organization, one, more importantly, but then, for the fan base engagement. If number one hits, then, you're going to see a better team. And what comes from a better team, you're going to start seeing more people inside the building rather than, not. So a lot of it, all of it, I think, really hinges on even moving into that new stadium. If Cam shows that he's the guy, then you're going to have people lining up waiting to buy tickets. They may not be there now, but if Cam Ward hits and he shows this year that he's the guy, oh, yeah, those phones are going to start ringing. Because people want to be a part of a winning team.
Absolutely. And Cam Ward and the Tennessee Titans will be back on the practice field tomorrow, not here in Nashville, but in beautiful Tampa, Florida, taking on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in joint practice. They'll play the Buccaneers in a preseason game this weekend. A big test for Cam Ward and the Tennessee Titans offense and the defense as well, because the Bucs have some firepower on the offensive side of the ball. We will break it all down tomorrow starting at 3 o'clock. Paul Kaharsky of PaulKaharsky.com will join us at 4 o'clock. He will be live in Tampa watching those practices, so we'll get his firsthand account of how the Titans performed in those practices. But in the meantime, have a safe rest of your drive home. We will talk to you tomorrow at 3 o'clock.
Be love, love on your people. Have a safe, blessed, wonderful day.
Peace. It's Wednesday, Derek.
I know. It's Wednesday. Yeah, today is Wednesday. Tomorrow's Thursday. So I will
talk to you. And the next day is Friday.
I will talk to you tomorrow. Peace out.